Chapter 11. My mother hands me a pill and a glass of water, watches as I drink, helps me into bed as I begin to shiver and my teeth chatter. She is the steady one now. I have a faint memory of shaking like this during my coming-of-age fast at 14 on Sugar Island. For 2 nights and 2 days during a cold and rainy October, I shivered beneath a wool blanket and a tarp on a boulder in the woods, prayed and waited for my vision to come. I had to wait a month, until the next moon had passed, before I could tell Auntie about my experience, how no vision had come to me, but that every muscle in my body spasmed the entire time. Cold and shivering is fine, Donis. It's when you stop shivering that you're in trouble. I blink and it's morning. Sunlight whispers against my eyelids. At some point, I fell asleep. Mom stirs at my side. Why is she? Lily. Something jolts through my body. Lily is dead. I see it all again. My best friend falling onto her back. The memory is painful. Every part of my body hurts. I get out of bed, still dressed in a ratty t-shirt and cutoffs, and head to my mom's bathroom. I know the pills are in the medicine cabinet. I need to go back to sleep. To forget this. Forget last night. Lily. Travis. Jamie. TJ. Lily. 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 My hand stops short of the orange prescription vial. Lily is somewhere. By now, Auntie and Sini Nimki will have washed her body with cedar water. Even if Sini didn't work for the traditional medicine program, Granny June would have asked her to prepare Lily for the 4-day journey to the next world. It isn't part of Auntie's job as tribal health director, but I know she will assist Sini. Each day has a purpose. Today, Lily's first day, she will mourn her family, loved ones. Me. She will mourn me. I can't sleep through it. I close the medicine cabinet and go to the table next to the front door. Grandma Pearl's birch bark basket in the shape of a blueberry. A pine cone hangs from each point of its flared crown. I reach inside for a pinch of loose leaf tobacco. My bare feet touch cold concrete steps and then grass slick with dew. The bumps and dents of the lawn remind me of dancing in my moccasins. Drum beats reverberating from uneven ground up my legs and into my heart. I felt that same medicine yesterday, sitting in the bleachers. I hold the Sema in the palm of my left hand, the one closest to my heart. Release it to the poplar, where I always begin my day. After my introduction, I inventory the 7 grandfathers. Love, respect, honesty, humility, bravery, wisdom, and truth. Which one will help with this unfathomable anguish? I don't have the answer. When I go back inside, my mother is pouring hot water into a dainty teacup. Want me to run a bath? She asks gently. If I say yes, Mom will set the kettle down and take care of me. She will skip visiting Grand Mary to stay by my side. She has always put my needs first, even before her own. Whenever I'd complain about Mom smothering me with her unending questions and hovering, Lily would say, cut her some slack. One time she snapped at me. Some of us would love to have a mom who puts their kid first. Lily adores my mother. Adored my mother. Thanks, but I need a quick shower before I go sit with Granny June at the funeral home. Can you drop me off on your way to Evercare? She opens her mouth. I know she will gently suggest I stay home. Mom, I need to be with Lily and Granny June. I need to help. That, my mother understands perfectly. When Granny June hugs me, I rest my chin atop her head. My nose stings. I visualize frost spreading inside my nasal cavity like feathery ice crystals on a window, overtaking the inferior turbinate closest to the tip of my nose, traveling up the medium turbinate, and finally covering the superior turbinate. I'm grateful. The cold keeps the pins and needles at bay. Granny June takes my hand. We walk to the simple pine casket. Its wood-burned etchings are in a traditional Ojibwe floral design that includes butterflies. I inhale deeply, numbing frost spreading to coat my lungs, and look down at Lily. My best friend looks like she's napping. She's wearing her black regalia, black as her spirit color. One time, Macy Manitou sneered about how goth was so 90s. Lily joked, "Black makes me look slimmer, hey?" She weighed maybe 96 pounds. The longer I stare at Lily, the less real she seems. A mannequin with bubblegum pink cheeks and lips. No black lipstick or heavily winged eyeliner. Nothing about this feels real. I look around for Auntie. If she isn't here at the funeral home, then she must be at the ceremonial fire Art will be tending in the woods behind their pole barn. My father's family was named for its role in the tribal community for generations. Firekeeper. Auntie happened to marry a man from another Ojibwe community who was also taught firekeeper duties. Firekeepers strike the fire for ceremonies, funerals, sweat lodges, and other cultural events where our prayers are carried by the smoke to Creator. A ceremonial fire is special. You don't roast marshmallows or sing 49er songs at it. Firekeepers ensure that protocols are followed the entire time it burns. No politics, no drinking, and no gossip. Only good thoughts to feed the fire and carry our prayers. Art must have struck the fire last night upon hearing the news. He will take care of the fire for the 4 nights and 4 days of Lily's journey. At the end of the 4th day, as the fire goes out in this world, it is struck in the next world, where it will burn without end for Lily. I am proud to come from people who served their community in this way. Auntie married a good man who continues this responsibility. The part I cannot fathom is Art tending a ceremonial fire for Lily, for her wake and funeral. She is only 18. Was only 18. Granny June leads me to the food table at one end of the room. There will be another at Art's workshop. Slow cookers filled with different versions of hominy soup, pork and beans, and macaroni soup. A cast iron pot of wild rice mixed with tender chunks of venison roast. Foil-lined pans of fry bread, trays of smoked whitefish, fried bologna and venison sausage. A brick of commodity cheese sliced into cracker-sized bites. Deviled eggs dusted with paprika, veggie trays, bags of chips, pans of blueberry galette, homemade cakes and pies next to store-bought varieties, bowls of strawberries and tiny wild blueberries. We sit down with full plates and we eat. With each bite, I observe a different person at the funeral home. Do you know what is going on? Are you involved? Jamie's strange warnings have me looking at everyone with new eyes. Lily's mother, Maggie, arrives on the 2nd day. She repeats herself to everyone who hugs her. I had to get the kids packed, shop for church clothes. If it were me in that coffin, my mother would be fused to it like an anglerfish. I remember once when Lily told me she was her mom's practice baby. Same with the next kid, a half-sister in Lansing. Auntie overheard us talking and sat us down. She talked about the boarding school that Granny June's daughters had been scooped up and taken to. Years spent marching like soldiers and training to be household domestics. They had the Anishinaabe Moin and cultural teachings beaten out of them. When they came back to Sugar Island, one of the girls had scarred palms that looked like melted plastic, and she ran into the woods at the sound of a kettle whistle. Her sister was afraid of men and had to sleep with her back against the wall. Auntie had told us, "When you criticize Maggie, just remember she was raised by one of those sisters, the one who didn't kill herself." I spot Auntie now, holding Maggie's hand while they both cry. I was quick to judge Lily's mom. Even today, my aunt's words were remembered as an afterthought. Maggie's 2 little ones sit with relatives near the food tables. The toddler girl, in a pretty yellow dress, has a contagious laugh that's bigger than she is. The boy, in a matching bow tie, is 1 year younger than the twins. He flashes a shy smile that is the same as Granny June's, where one side claims more of the happy than the other. I continue watching as Maggie walks over to where they're sitting. The little girl reaches for her mom, who kisses the toddler's forehead slowly. There is healing medicine in those kisses. When Auntie spills coffee on herself, I offer to drive her car to the house for a clean blouse. On the ferry ride to the island, I think about the second day of Lily's spiritual journey. It is for atonement. She will face every living creature she ever harmed during her lifetime. I glance at the car next to me and recognize one of Travis's cousins. The car to my right is filled with his relatives. The Flint family would have a fire lit for him at the lodge behind the Elder Center. Tribal members can use its community room for wakes and funerals. Anger flashes through me as I think about how it's Travis's second day as well. He will be unable to move on until he accounts for the harm that he is responsible for, including taking Lily from us. Time is a concept of our earthly minds. In the spirit world, his second day might last an eternity for him, as it should. My nails dig into my palms. I want Travis to suffer, to feel our pain, for his atonement to be a mirage just beyond his grasp. I can't be around the fire like this, filled with such fury. Only good thoughts for Lily. I look down at my hands, expecting to see blood. The curved indentations resemble tiny scars.